Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, The Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Classic FM. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, country, rock, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's musical trivia questions come to us from the website onthisday.com. Question number one. Which of the following was the title of an opera, the lyrics to which were finalized on this very day back in 1935? Was it A, La Bohème, B, The Magic Flute, C, Carmen, or D, Porgy and Bess? An opera finally completed in 1935. Which one was that anyway? And question number two, what gift did Elvis Presley give to his mom on this day back in 1956? Was it A, a fancy new dress? Was it B, his old autographed guitar? Was it C, a new car? Or D, a new house? So what was Elvis's gift anyway to his mom on this very day? The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from that same website, onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of September the 1st. Well, it was on this very day back in 1653 that German Baroque composer Johann Pachelbel was born. He was known for his canon in D major, which was originally scored for three violins and basso continuo. Pachelbel, born today, 1653. And it was 70 years ago today, 1953, that Buddy Holly and Bob Montgomery auditioned for the radio station Key Day AV in Lubbock, Texas. They were given a half-hour Sunday afternoon show to perform country and bluegrass music. Buddy Holly's bluegrass radio debut, KDAV in Lubbock, Texas, today, 1953. And in country music news, we have this article titled, Elvis Presley Revolver Sells at Auction for $200,000. This is published in TMZ.com on the 29th of August, 2023. Elvis Presley's gun collection is in demand because someone dropped six figures on one of his revolvers, with the final bid more than doubling what it was expected to fetch at auction. The late singer Smith & Wesson's Model 53 double-action revolver was up for sale through Rock Island Auction Company, and they tell us the winning bid came in at $199,750. Elvis received the gun as a gift in November 1976, just 9 months before he died, and it's loaded with custom features marking the bicentennial. The revolver is customized with five pointed stars and a bald eagle holding a Betsy Ross American flag, plus the Liberty Bell. And, quote-unquote, 1776 to 1976 is inscribed in gold near the muzzle. As we first reported, Elvis's gun was expected to fetch at least $60,000 at auction, but a bidding war broke out. The king of rock and roll reportedly owned 37 firearms and a machine gun, and interest appears sky high. And in classical music news, we have this article titled, 84% of the general population want to experience an orchestral concert, new study reveals. This is published in ClassicFM.com on the 29th of August, 2023. Our latest data suggests the audience for live orchestral performance has grown over the past 5 years. James Williams, managing director of the Royal Philharmonic. With the COVID-19 pandemic having made a sizable impact on the arts during the 2018 to 2023 period, Williams said, the findings of this research were most welcome news and have allowed the orchestra to better understand the breadth of repertoire, which can bring audiences to a concert hall for the first time. Examples of these different types of repertoire include orchestras performing musical theater works, pop tunes, and film favorites. The more creative entry points we offer, the more people that will start journeys of discovery and move on to experience more challenging repertoire. Stan Getz, Decifonato, introduces our jazz music news, and it's an interview. When it hits a low C, it takes you to another dimension. The musician's in love with obscure instruments. Why settle for a recorder when you could wield a contrabass clarinet or something you invented yourself? Meet the players drawn to the unusual. This is published in The Guardian on the 18th of August, 2023, by Kevin Le Chandra. In the 2022 film Alice, the titular heroine, a slave living on a 19th century style plantation in Georgia, discovers that she is really living in the 1970s. The soundtrack reflects the latter period, an age of afros and blaxploitation, through songs by Stevie Wonder, Willie Hutch, and Chaka Khan. But it is peppered with interludes that feature an instrument that was first heard in the days of plantations, the contrabass clarinet. The instrument is played by James Carter, a 54-year-old musician from Detroit, who has been a significant figure in jazz since the early 90s. "I just love the muddy earth sound it has," he says, "all that air flowing through it. It made you feel like you're the lord of the underground." The contrabass clarinet has such expressive range, it reminds me of bullfrogs in the night, yet it's also a kind of wise. You can hear what he's talking about on his 2003 album, Gardenias for Lady Day, a tribute to the vocal great Billie Holiday. On Strange Fruit, Holiday's anti-lynching anthem, Carter draws from the contrabass clarinet a series of primeval, haunting wails that entirely suit the subject matter. The low-end horn is like an engulfing darkness. Producing such evocative sounds takes no small amount of graft, as Carter and other musicians who play rare instruments can attest. For those who play the sorts of instruments that are rarely seen in orchestras and jazz bands, there are practical hurdles to overcome, such as honing posture and technique to successfully negotiate the shape, size, and structure of these uncommon inventions, not to mention the cost and complexity of servicing and maintaining such devices. It is fascinating to hear what artists in different genres have to say about the advantages and disadvantages of playing what their peers do not. First used in 19th-century classical orchestras and military bands, the contrabass clarinet is one of the more obscure members of the woodwind family. It has long held an appeal for jazz musicians intent on creating a wide tonal spectrum in their work. One of Carter's special sources of inspiration, Anthony Braxton, an innovative Chicago-born composer-improviser, raised the profile of the instrument when he used it at prestigious international festivals in Montreux and Berlin back in the mid-70s. He was way ahead of his time, says Carter, whose arsenal of reed instruments also includes F mezzo soprano, tenor, and baritone saxophones. When he hits a low C, it takes you to another dimension. I wanted to experience the same thing when I played it myself. With its broad, upright frame like a giant paperclip, the contrabass clarinet requires its players to have physical strength as well as technique. It can be cumbersome, depending on players, how you hold it against your body, says Carter. You have to make your lungs work a little bit harder with it, but that's also the beauty. You feel everything you put into it. As much as Carter, who has worked with jazz and rock stars such as Herbie Hancock and Ginger Baker, hails the wonders of the contrabass clarinet, he is keen to acknowledge the role that specialist woodwind makers have played in its evolution. The renowned German instrument maker who died earlier this year titled it with trill keys, small levers that facilitate the shaking and warbling of notes, and additional octaves that let the instrument sing more. That question of design and modification runs through the rote history of instruments, both rare and familiar. Yet most exciting are those custom-made devices that were never put into mass production, such is the case of a one-off, low-register beast played by Paul Rodgers that straddles eras, genres, and cultures. A hybrid of the Baroque period, viola da gamba, double bass, and Indian sitar. The unnamed instrument has 7 rather than 4 plain strings, as well as 14 sympathetic strings, non-plain strings tucked under the plain strings to produce greater resonance. Mozart's Piano Concerto No. 21 in C Major introduces Music Research and Technology. It's an article titled, Music May Reduce Baby's Pain During Jabs or Heel Prick Tests, Study Suggests. Newborns suffered less pain during heel prick blood tests if they had heard a Mozart lullaby. This is written by Linda Geddes, The Guardian, 28 August 2023. Playing music such as a Mozart lullaby to babies may help reduce their suffering during painful procedures, research suggests. Minor medical procedures such as injections or heel prick blood tests are commonly performed on newborn infants, and while some people have argued that babies' brains are not developed enough for them to really feel pain, recent research has suggested that they are experiencing it much like adults do. Dr. Saminathan Abulagan, a new neonatal and prenatal medicine fellow at Thomas Jefferson University Hospital in Philadelphia, who led the new research, said, "Studies have also demonstrated that early pain experiences may alter pain responses later in life and lead to other long-term adverse outcomes, hence establishing an easy and reliable." On Balagan and his colleagues measured the pain levels of 100 newborn infants undergoing a heel prick blood test as part of routine screening for rare but serious conditions such as cystic fibrosis and inherited metabolic disorders. All were given a small dose of sugar solution 2 minutes before the procedure, while 54 of the infants were also played an instrumental Mozart lullaby for 20 minutes before, during, and for 5 minutes after it. The other babies did not listen to any music. An investigator wearing noise-canceling headphones assessed the baby's pain levels using a standard scoring system that assessed facial expressions, crying, breathing patterns, limb movements, and alertness. The study published in Pediatric Research found that while pain scores were zero for both groups before the heel prick, the average pain score of infants who listened to the lullaby were significantly lower during and immediately after the procedure compared with those who did not listen to music. The pain scores of infants who listened to the lullaby were minor during the procedure, dropping to zero a minute later. Average pain scores for infants who didn't hear the music were maximum at the time of the heel prick, dropping only slightly after 1 minute and still at a minor level at 2 minutes. Music intervention is an easy, reproducible, and inexpensive tool for pain relief from minor procedures in healthy-term newborns. We suggest that future studies should also consider exploring the effects of similar interventions such as recorded parental voice instead of Mozart music. Previous research has suggested that premature babies may feel less when they are spoken to by their mothers. Involving parents as partners in neonatal care is an underutilized approach. Rebecca Slater, a professor of pediatric neuroscience at the University of Oxford, who studies infant pain perception, said, "Finding the best methods to comfort babies during painful procedures is extremely important. This new research suggests that auditory stimulation through music may reduce pain scores. Comforting interventions such as listening to music should be considered when babies require essential critical procedures." The Doobie Brothers, What a Fool Believes, introduces our rock, pop, and local music news. Summer and early fall concerts in the local area. This is written by Kimberly Catadella on the 26th of April, 2023, News and Observer. You can get your outdoor music fix at Triangle Area venues all summer long. Between Red Hat, Coca Booth, Walnut Creek, and other venues, or even including Greensboro, there are outdoor concerts nearly every day all summer and into the fall. Most, if not all, on the list require attendees to buy tickets in advance, so check websites or call ticket line numbers below to learn prices and to complete your purchases. Here's just a sampling of these upcoming outdoor concerts. The Red Hat Amphitheater in Raleigh. Go to Red Hat Amphitheater, that's one word, .com, or phone 919-996-8500. Coming up, Jason Isbell and the 400 Unit on October 7th at 6:30 p.m. Walnut Creek in Raleigh. Go to Walnut Creek Amphitheater, one word, .com, or phone 919-831-6400. Outlaw Music Festival coming up featuring Willie Nelson and family, September the 8th, starting at 4:45 p.m. Polka Booth Amphitheater. Go to boothamphitheater.com or phone 919-462-2025. Rashawn Patterson and Loose Ends coming on September the 9th at 6 p.m. And then there's the White Oak Amphitheater in Greensboro. Go to greensborocoliseum.com or phone 336-373-7400. The Doobie Brothers, September 7th at 7:30 p.m. So, how'd you do on today's trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, which of the following was the title of an opera, the lyrics to which were finally finalized on this very day back in 1935? Was that A, La Boheme, B, The Magic Flute, C, Carmen, or D, Porgy and Bess? Correct answer. Answer D, 1935's Porgy and Bess. Puccini's La Boheme was completed in 1896. Mozart's The Magic Flute was completed in 1791. And Bizet's Carmen was completed in 1875. Porgy and Bess was the opera completed in 1935 by George Gershwin. So what technically is an opera anyway? Well, as noted in an article titled Opera 101 in AtlantaOpera.org, opera is, in fact, defined as a dramatic story told through song. It is considered by many to be the most complete art form, combining all of the elements of art, words, music, drama, and dance. The unique thing in opera is the use of music to convey an entire story or plot. This is based on the feeling that music can communicate people's reactions and emotions better than words, read or spoken, or pictures. Opera takes any type of dramatic story and tries to make it more exciting and more believable with the help of music. Many famous stories have been made into operas, including Cinderella, Hansel and Gretel, and Romeo and Juliet. A November 13, 2009 History.com article titled Porgy and Bess, the First Great American Opera, premieres on Broadway, adds this. On October the 10th, 1935, George Gershwin's opera Porgy and Bess premieres on Broadway. Porgy and Bess began its journey to the Broadway stage in 1926 when George Gershwin wrote a letter late one night to the author of a book he was reading, proposing that the two of them collaborate on an operatic adaptation. The American writer DuBose Hayward, author of the novel Porgy, immediately agreed to Gershwin's proposal, but commercial commitments in New York prevented Gershwin from actually beginning work on the project for another 7 years. In the meantime, singer Al Jolson attempted to mount a musical version of Porgy, starring himself in blackface, but that effort foundered in 1932, leaving the way open for the Gershwin-Hayward collaboration that would feature an all-African-American cast of classically trained singers, revolutionary casting in 1930s America. Over the course of more than 2 years, beginning in the spring of 1933, they collaborated mostly by mail and managed to create some of the greatest songs in American musical theater history, including Summertime, I Got Plenty of Nuttin', and it ain't necessarily so. After the 1930s, the full George Gershwin score of Porgy and Bess would not be performed again until the triumphant 1976 revival by the Houston Grand Opera helped establish its current place in the standard operatic repertoire. George Gershwin and DuBose Hayward died in 1937 and 1940, respectively, not knowing that the poorly received Porgy and Bess, which premiered in 1935 and closed some 4 months later, would later gain recognition as one of the most important American musical works of the 20th century. And the answer to our second question, which gift did Elvis Presley give to his mom on this very day back in 1956? Was it A, a fancy new dress, B, his old autographed guitar, C, a new car, or D, a new house? Correct answer? Answer C, a new car. Specifically, it was on this very day back in 1956 that Elvis bought his mom a pink Cadillac. As noted in an AuctionDirectUSA.com article titled, What Cars Did Elvis Presley Own? In 1950s America, you know you made it when you drove a Cadillac. After signing his first record deal, Elvis purchased the Cadillac Fleetwood 60 that he had custom painted in pink for his beloved mother, who did not even have a driver's license. Today, that car is on display at the Automobile Museum at Graceland in Memphis, Tennessee. While he purchased approximately 400 Cadillacs in his lifetime, many of which went to his family and friends, Elvis would eventually add a 1960s Rolls-Royce Silver Cloud, a 1970s Mercedes-Benz 280 SL, a 1973 Stutz Blackheart Hawk, a 1975 Ferrari Dino, and several other imported models to his collection. Many of these vehicles are also on display at Graceland. Finally, as a salute to Paco Bell's birthday today, let's close out the program with a canon. As noted in a January 2018 Berkeley.edu article by Beth Denich, canon means rule or law, and in music, canons are like the children's game Follow the Leader, where the leader makes a move and the follower initiates and imitates what the leader does. In a canon, the follower's voice sings the same music as the leader's voice, beginning any time after the leader has started, but before the leader stops. Here, then, is Paco Bell's canon in D. We've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program is also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words: kindness is a language which blind people hear.